college football playback right here on the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond, along for ladies and gentlemen, the ladies' man, Kyle Barber. How are you?
What's going on, Dave? How are you on this lovely Sunday morning?
Oh, it's Sunday. It's great. Great to have week two under the belt for us. College football. Very excited about that. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. Really enjoyed yesterday's slate of games, particularly the Sun Belt going 3-0 against the Big 12.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive day for them. And, you know, guys, we've talked about this once or twice before. The old joke in 2000, I know the league was created in 2001. The old joke used to be that the SEC created the Sun Belt so they would be able to have more FBS wins towards the bowl eligibility. And yesterday proved another one thing that it proved for me is that the so-called Power Five is not, again, they need to take that term away. It's a joke. And the Sun Belt is a great league, and they proved it again. And hopefully we are Division One, and hopefully they can one day see they can make a lot more money by having everybody be a power league, and they can have more teams in the playoff and give the customers, which is aka the fans, what they really want.
The Power Five argument is
a joke.
One that when you look at year in, year out, you see these so-called Group of Five schools pull off the wins against Power Five schools. And it's just like the media seems to forget those wins happen after they happen, and they keep throwing that Power Five narrative down your throat. But the Sun Belt in particular used to be the league that, yeah, it was the weakest league in FBS, or the weakest non-BCS league, or the weakest Power Five league between them and the MAC. And the Sun Belt's gotten better in recent years. And, you know, when conference realignment happened, one thing the Sun Belt did was it did not go after media markets. It brought in the best teams it could, and a couple of those teams were brought up from FCS and in App State and Georgia Southern. And what they did was focus on football. And, you know, schools like Lafayette, Louisiana Lafayette, and South Alabama and Arkansas State have invested in their facilities. And the Sun Belt ain't what it used to be. I mean, it's not. It's one thing, I think, Conference USA used to be significantly better than Sun Belt back when we were in it, et cetera. And I think with Conference USA kind of taking a step back and their piss poor television exposure that CUSA has right now, I think it's helped the Sun Belt in recruiting. I used to, you know, any Conference USA schools can get any player over a Sun Belt school they would want by and large, and that's not the case now. And I don't know. The Sun Belt right now is, you got to argue, yesterday they're right on par, you know, with any of the Group of Five leagues. I mean, the top of the league. But then you look at Coastal, who would be considered a bottom tier Sun Belt league. They just walked the dog on Kansas, who's a bottom tier Big 12 team. So, I mean, Sun Belt is it's really good. It's a really good league.
Yeah, Coastal getting the win 38-23 over the Jayhawks. So 2 years in a row. And like you said, Kyle, the SBC, I saw that a lot yesterday on TV. But Sun Belt Conference is definitely here to stay. And again, hopefully one of these days we can get rid of the Power Five, Group of Five narrative. And they'll see that again. That's the one thing that I have disrespect for college football is they don't understand that they can make a lot more money, and they need to expand the playoffs, and let's be done with that. I'm tired of talking about it, but we'll keep talking about it until they do something about it.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, you're looking at, I mean, they talk about money. I was like, if you expand the playoffs, that's more games, which means there's going to be more revenue and they're going to make more money. I mean, the rich will continue to get richer. I mean, that's what's really dumb. And it will also help and that's like you said all the time, Kyle, it's the teams that are at the bottom of the Power Five that don't want the schools that are top tier American, Sun Belt, teams like that. They don't want them to surpass them. That's what it comes down to, I think. I think you're right on that.
Yeah, well, I think by and large that is the case. But yesterday, as you know, you look at Iowa State, for example, losing to to Louisiana, or I still call them Louisiana Lafayette. But the Raging Cajun, you know, Lafayette, Louisiana, they won 11 games last year. And, you know, I don't know how many people realize that, that don't follow the Sun Belt. 11 wins. And Iowa State was projected by a lot of people to be a dark horse to win the Big 12. And, you know, Iowa State has been really good in recent years. Iowa State used to be a laughing stock of the Big 12. And they've been really good in recent years, gotten better every year, and got a great defense. But Louisiana went in there yesterday and dominated Iowa State. I mean, they pushed them around. That wasn't like just some fluky win. They, you know, there was a, you could argue that, you know, some people say maybe it was fluky because they hit some big special teams plays that kickoff returns, punt returns, et cetera. Well, you know what? They did a better job working on special teams during this pandemic than Iowa State did. But the defensive performance, they held Iowa State to 17 points. And that ain't no fluke. You hold somebody to 17 points, you're playing good defense. And so hats off to Louisiana Lafayette. Bubba, what did you think of that performance with the Raging Cajun against the Cyclones?
Yeah, and exactly what you were saying. I'm not so surprised that the Raging Cajuns went into Ames and won, but the way in which they won, and I think them shutting down Brock Purdy the way he did and some of those numbers that Purdy had yesterday or didn't have, I should say, we'll be scrolling across the screen here in just a moment, but I want to say he finished something like 16 out of 35 for just maybe about 150 yards. It was not much at all. And I know Bruce Feldman yesterday last night on Twitter was giving a shout out to the Louisiana defensive coordinator whose name escapes me, and just the tremendous job he did shutting down that Cyclones offense. And then something else about this game, guys, much larger than the victory itself, the post-game interview with Billy Napier and him giving a shout-out, as you would fully expect, to his late offensive line coach and DJ Looney, who passed away here in the last few weeks from a heart attack on the field.
Yeah, that was sad. I remember hearing about it back in August, and Coach Napier addressing that and how, you know, not only were they dealing with the pandemic and dealing with social justice stuff, but dealing with something much more personal. And great interview by Billy or Napier. He comes across as very genuine. A lot of guys you hear in interviews, and you can understand why they win because they're very cerebral or they're very fiery. And he just came across as a very genuine person.
I looked it up. Ron Roberts, defensive coordinator.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Correct. Yes.
So yeah, the that game was one of my favorites, and I enjoyed that immensely. How about Tommy Nason? He said it's going to come down to a lawsuit. Talking about Kyle, I know you mentioned that too. When it comes down to the football playoff, I think there's no question. When you look at winning 25 games in a row, even though we're not Central Florida fans, they are in the same conference with East Carolina. And if they win 25 in a row and they still didn't make the playoffs, I don't know. You're right, Tommy. It's definitely going to come down to a lawsuit. We've talked about that a number of times for sure. And hopefully one of these days they'll realize they can get a whole bunch of money by having extra games in there. And even if it's 8, I would prefer 16, but that's what I want. But that's going to be a long time of coming before that'll ever happen, I think.
Well, I mean, I think the most logical thing that could probably happen would be if the playoffs go to 8 and you take your 5 so-called Power 5 champions, and then you have your highest ranked team from the group of 5 automatically make the playoffs. I mean, that would be throwing us a bone. It wouldn't be equal footing, but I think everybody would take it. If it guaranteed a team from the so-called group of 5 got a playoff spot, I think we would take it at this point. It would be a start. And then once that one group of 5 team made it into the playoffs every year, they'd have to do something. And then once on a yearly basis they were doing something, at least make it the second round, eventually winning a national championship, then I think you could see it become all-inclusive. But anyway, that's kind of more it's always a good topic to discuss, but yeah, that's a big picture, whereas, you know, there's some actual games to talk about right now. So,
Yeah, what did you think? What did you think? Obviously, about the, I think last night I was watching the Clemson game. They were dominant. No surprise there. Certainly, Oklahoma and Texas, they took care of business. West Virginia was another one that they really, not that it's a surprise, but they took care of business. And I think I know, Bubba, you mentioned to me off, well, in our group text, that I didn't watch all the UNC game, but they pulled away in the fourth quarter, but they scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, but it was a lot closer for the first three quarters. Was it a 4-point game going into the fourth quarter?
Right. It was 10-6 going into the fourth quarter, and then the Tar Heels scored 21 in the fourth quarter. Three touchdown runs, short touchdown runs of 6 yards or less by Javonte Williams, and won 31-6 in their opener at Kenan Stadium in front of no one. But yeah, that was a game. Did not surprise me at all. I certainly felt North Carolina would win. I went back and forth on that one in my pick'em contest with some of my buddies. I think Tar Heels or something like a 22.5-point favor ended up covering at the end. But Syracuse really struggled offensively. I think they had two running backs that chose to opt out because of COVID. So it was not a surprise whatsoever that the Orange struggled to put up points yesterday in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, they. I didn't watch a lot of that one because I tend not to watch a lot of Tar Heel football, particularly if they're winning. I still don't know if the Tar Heels are what people think they are, which is a contender in the ACC. I do think they're a good football team, but I don't know if they're going to be the team to rival Clemson. Maybe they will be. Notre Dame looked pretty good against Duke, but not overly impressive. Louisville looked good against Western Kentucky. That's who I'm hoping comes out of there and challenges the Tigers. But UNC, good football team, and did what they were supposed to do against a Syracuse program that has not progressed at all the way I thought they would under Dino Brables. I always want to call him Dino Bravo. I don't know if you guys know this, but nice win for the Tar Heels yesterday over Syracuse.
Dave, a few numbers from that game. Sam Howell, of course, the quarterback for North Carolina. Yeah. A lot of talk about him, the type of player he is entering his sophomore season. He did throw two picks yesterday. He finished 25 out of 34 for just under 300 yards with that one touchdown and two interceptions.
Yeah, I think that for me, it's not that Carolina is a bad football team. It's my issue would be is number 18 in the country. I think that obviously they deserve credit where credit's due, but I think that they're obviously getting a lot of hype because they have a good football coach in Mack Brown, and he comes back and they had some flash year. No question about it. They got a great quarterback, but to be my issue is number 18 in the country. I'm still, that's my big issue right now.
They may be the 18th best team in the country if you're counting teams that are playing. So I really don't have a problem with that ranking. I don't think they're going to – I don't think it'll be them in Louisville – excuse me, them in
Clemson. They have the Ohio States of the world in there.
That's I know. They couldn't be. That's why I said if you just count the teams that are playing. You shouldn't be ranked until you play. Ohio State may be playing soon. But we jumped over to the ACC – but I wanted to finish up, if you guys don't mind, the Sun Belt.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Arkansas State beat Kansas State yesterday. That was one I called. That was my upset of the week. And I was kind of concerned early on because K-State jumped up. I believe it was 21-7.
Yeah, that's right, 21-7.
And then Arkansas State comes back. Unbelievable performance by they got a receiver. Bubba, I don't know if you bothered to look that up. I'm terrible with names. They had a receiver yesterday that looked like one of the best receivers in the country. Three touchdowns, eight receptions. Just looked dominant at times, that kid did. Very impressive performance by that receiver and by that quarterback, but particularly by that receiver. Blake Anderson's got a football team. Did you get his name, Bubba?
Yes, Jonathan Adams Jr. He had those three touchdown receptions, like you were saying, Kyle, and he finished with eight catches for 98 yards.
Yeah, he looked like an NFL receiver. I don't know what he normally does. I'm assuming he's their best receiver normally. But he looked great. And I know Black Anderson has done a great job at Lafayette, taking him to a bowl, I think, every year since he's been there. I thought they could go up to Manhattan and pull that off. They had already played Memphis. I watched that Memphis-Arkansas State game, and what I thought I was watching was two good football teams playing, and I was. And when you already had a game under your belt, you took on a good opponent. Kansas State hadn't got their feet wet yet. Kansas State jumps up early, kind of starts resting on their laurels, and Arkansas State said, hey, we're here to win, and got the Vic over the Wildcats.
And not only were the Red Wolves able to overcome that 21-7 first half deficit, Kyle, they and I know you and I talked about this, they had a couple of very stupid plays on where they had personal fouls. Yeah. One, Kansas State was going to be facing third and 33, and they gave them a first down. And that one, like you said, it's a dumb play. He opened up the door for the officials to interpret that the way he did, with the shove toward the quarterback. And then the second one was certainly more legit, where it was right there in the final 45 seconds or so, and he took a shot that gave K-State a shot at the end zone, and they weren't even able to throw the ball to the end zone from about the 40-yard line, which I didn't understand because, if I'm remembering correctly, there wasn't really that much pressure on the quarterback. The 25-yard throw, I don't know.
I don't know what was there, but I know when he got the penalty, Bub, I said, oh, no. I said, they're going to – I said, anytime something like that happens, it costs you. I was like, you know, 15-yard penalty, get them closer to the end zone, they're going to have a chance throwing a Hail Mary. And it's like a dying quail down to the – incomplete down – it wasn't even close to the end zone. I don't know. Bubba, were they trying to set up like a hook and lateral, you think?
That's what I was wondering. I didn't go back and watch it to see what the other receivers were doing. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe they were trying to do the old Boise State hook and lateral that they executed to perfection in, 2006 in the Fiesta Bowl against Oklahoma.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they were trying to set up a hook and lateral, because otherwise that didn't make any sense at all, the way that throw looked and what they were trying to do. And, you know, or unless it was just miscommunication, but the receivers seemed to be down there. They didn't seem to be in the end zone. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they were trying to set up the hook and lateral. But did not work.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Blake Anderson. I thought that he was – I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in America. I really do. I think that certainly – I think, Bubba, when we had speaking of his name, excuse me, the play-by-play voice of Arkansas State, I know there's a huge buyout because they've had four coaches that have left for, I guess, Power Five leagues. But he actually is one that would be, I don't know if he's Carolina, if you don't have a Mike Houston, if Mike Houston leaves, do you think he would take a East Carolina job?
I mean, he's got ties to North Carolina because he coached at UNC with Fedora.
Yeah, that's what I was.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I personally think if Blake Anderson leaves Arkansas State, it'd be a so-called Power Five job. I think, he's been there a while. He does have that big buyout. It's got to be, I would think it's getting to the point now where it has to be a little smaller because he has been there a while. The buyout, I mean. But initially, his first contract had a huge buyout because they had three coaches leave in consecutive years to take Power Five, or two took Power Five jobs, one went to Boise State, but in three consecutive years. So they were like, oh, my God, we can't have this keep happening. So they gave Blake a ridiculous, ridiculous buyout when he signed the contract. But, no, great coach. Of course, he lost his wife about a year ago, and then lost his dad soon thereafter. So suffered a lot of loss recently. So from a personal aspect, I'm sure that was nice to get that win over over Kansas State. And then the last Sun Belt upset of the day, Bob, did you have something to add?
Yeah, and while we're talking about Blake Anderson, I was just kind of laughing to myself last night when yesterday afternoon, I should say, when the Red Wolves pulled that off in Manhattan. And I'm sure Southern Miss fans may have thought this before now for sure. But as far as hiring a football coach or not hiring a football coach just because he wore jeans to an interview, I agree that that was odd. But at the same time, Blake Anderson would have been an excellent hire, obviously, for USM back several years ago.
Yeah, the story with that is Fedora left for UNC, for UNC, and their AD retired at the same time, and Richard
before Gilbert, right?
Way before Gilbert, I think his name was Richard Giannini, and he had been there a while, and he retired. He retired when Fedora left, and didn't have an AD. So the president of the school was making the hire and doing the interviews.
Oh, that's right.
And Blake Anchie was a female, and I'm not saying females can't make good hires in terms of athletics, but maybe the fact she was a female was irrelevant. Forget I said that. But anyway, Blake Anderson.
You just didn't know about sports, right? That's what you're pointing at.
Right. And well, and I think maybe the fact that he wore jeans and a polo might have bothered her more than it would have bothered most guys, particularly if you're a football coach. He went in there in jeans and a polo, and that's the story. I mean, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room, but the story is he went in there in jeans and a polo and came across very much like he thought he had the job in the bag, and she dismissed him and basically said, it's not, you know. And he didn't present himself as professional enough, and to her, this is the story, and thought the job was his, and I understand. I mean, Fedora had ran a great program. He was his OC, and only made sense. And they ended up saying, no, we're not going to hire you because you didn't present yourself professional enough. And we're gonna hire Ellis frickin' Johnson.
12, baby. Woo!
And look what happened. But, yeah, I'm sure Southern Miss fans have thought about it many times. They've had success since they didn't hire him. You know, they had the year they won the East under Coach Todd Monken, who then left for Tampa Bay. And Jay Hobson had some good years. But, yeah, I'm sure Southern Miss has thought about not hiring Blake. But I want to wrap up the Big 12 upsets. Coastal Carolina beat Kansas last year in a terrible football game, 12-7, I believe it was.
Yes.
And yesterday goes into Lawrence, 7.5-point underdogs, I think was the spread, to Les Miles in Kansas. And, Just really dominated the football game. That final score wasn't even indicative to how dominant Coastal was in that game. And great performance by the quarterback. Their quarterback looks really good. I believe it's his first year starting for them. Bubba, is that right?
That is correct. And he's from Porter Ridge.
Yeah.
And because a buddy of mine that I had coached with down at Sun Valley High School had coached him at Porter Ridge. And that young man's name is Grayson McCall.
You kind of got to wonder how he ended up at Coastal and not an ACC school, East Carolina or App State.
Yeah, and they ran the ball so effectively, guys, that Grayson McCall, it took a lot of weight off his young shoulders. He finished 11 out of 18 for 133 yards, three touchdowns, and no picks. So just he did.
And that is a good point. They did run the ball really well. You make a good point there. But he made some throws that he just dropped on a dime. He's very accurate. But you're right. Their offense starts with a running game, and they ran the ball very effectively. And, you know, I think Kansas is awful. I don't think Coastal Carolina is a 8-9-10 win team by any means. I do think they're gonna be competitive this year and maybe fight for six wins, but – I think that had a lot to do with Kansas not being very good on defense at all.
Yeah, the final was 38-23, but I was watching that game. It was what, guys, 28-3 at halftime, something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. 28-3.
It was when I was watching, I was like, wow, I was looking forward to it. I thought it would be I thought Coastal had a good chance to obviously pull up the upset, but I thought it would be a much closer game. And I was looking at that score and watching the game. I was like, wow, this is.
I thought it was going to be a shootout, and it almost turned into one. If Kansas would have had any semblance of offense in the first half, it would have been a shootout. Strange decision last night in that game. I don't know what in the hell they were thinking. Kansas goes for two, cuts it to 17. scores a touchdown and kicks, if they kick the extra point, they've cut it to 10, which I thought was the point of cutting it to 17, get the three scores. They cut it to 17, score another touchdown, cut it to 10, excuse me, cut it to 12, or cut it to 11. And instead of kicking another extra point to cut it to 10, they go for two to cut it to 9, which does nothing for you. They don't get it, so now they're, you know, down by 11 still instead of getting it down by 10 to a field goal and a touchdown. Did you see that play, Bubba?
I did not.
I still want to know what was going through Love Miles' head, why he went for two again when all he needed to do was cut it, kick an extra point at that point to cut it to 10 very late in the third, early in the fourth. I do not know his rationale behind that. Didn't matter. Coastal, you know, pulled away anyway. But at that particular moment, I really don't know why they did that.
I don't know. And that another thing that comes to mind, guys, is that job is probably – would you say that's the worst job in college football with Kansas?
No, I would say it's probably the worst job in the Power Five. Maybe Vandy. Well, I don't think it's the worst job in college football. No, it'd be too much money to be the worst job in college football.
Right.
I know, but what I'm saying is like the fact that you have – it's a basketball school and you have a guy even like – I mean, I know he hasn't been there long enough. But
– it's a tough job. If you're asking if it's the toughest job in college –
well, toughest, yeah.
It may be. I think you can win there. Mangino did. I think they I think Les could win. You need somebody up there that can really recruit.
You don't have the players in Kansas that.
No, not at all. You need to be able to go down to Texas and Oklahoma, et cetera, and get some players. And I think Les can do that. Or you need somebody that's creative. If Les Miles don't work out there, if I were them, I'd go after somebody like Niumatalolo. I'd do something like run the triple option, be creative. That gives them a competitive advantage where they don't have to have as much talent. But you guys, if you will excuse me, I have to go handle some business you can't handle for me, and I'll be back in about 5.
All right. All right, Bubba. nothing like live streaming here on Facebook Live and obviously on our YouTube channel. I want to give a shout-out to Tommy Nason and Bubba Grant. I know they're watching more and more people coming on right now. Appreciate those guys very much. Bubba, I tell you what, it was so nice yesterday. What was it, 22 games yesterday in college football?
21. Yeah, 21, we had that one on Thursday night with UAB, Miami. But, yeah, 21 games yesterday. So compared to last week where you only had 6 on Saturday, it was a much more full slate.
Yeah, and then today, I know we're college football playoff, but the NFL, Bubba, kicks off today. I'm very excited about that. And we don't have in North Carolina, those we can watch this around the world, but North Carolina, we don't have high school football. So it's nice to have now college football and pro football. Obviously, I know the Chiefs won on Thursday night, but the full slate of games today and obviously 2 games tomorrow night in NFL. So that's going to be really cool. And it's going to be interesting to see. Bubba, how about this? Tom Brady in a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform this afternoon at 4:25. It'll be Tom Brady and obviously Drew Brees in the NFC South. It just seems really weird to say that.
Yeah, Tom Brady and Gronk.
Yeah.
Definitely weird to see them wearing those colors as opposed to the blue and red of the Patriots. But we'll definitely be interesting to see how they do over the course of the season because when you bring in guys like that, you certainly expect immediate results.
It's going to be cool. Tarbor native Todd Gurley, Bubba, is going from the Rams. He's going to be playing for the Falcons this afternoon. Give a shout-out to our good friend. Obviously, he's in North Carolina now. But when you have a guy like Terry Gallagher, a big Falcons fan, another fan of the Falcons, a friend of mine, Glenn Poland, that watches our show, too, and listens to the podcast. I want to give him a shout-out, both Falcons fans. So another storyline today, Bubba, a smaller one would be in the NFL, we'll say this really quickly, is the Las Vegas Raiders. They're taking on the Carolina Panthers, our hometown team today. That's going to be interesting in Bank of America Stadium.
Yeah, haven't kept up with it a whole lot, just being honest, because I've been so in tune with what's going on with college football. But But yeah, hopefully the Panthers will be able to get a victory.
No question. And my team has no nickname right now, the Washington football team, taking on the Eagles. The Eagles have won, Bubba, six straight against the team formerly known as the Redskins. So whatever the nickname will be coming up in the next 2 years, and we'll see about that. I know the big game tonight is the at 7, will be at the 8 o'clock hour, will be the Rams and the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? So that'll be tonight. Our friend Brian Medor and Brian Bailey, we know they'll be watching that game tonight in the on NBC. That should be great. So those of you, we'll give you a little taste of pro football, and while Kyle's taking care of some business, it'll be great. All the games on, certainly. Bubba, yesterday, didn't have the kids yesterday, so it was great because I got a chance to eat a pizza and some wings, some Diet Coke, and watch, just be lazy yesterday. I was really exhausted, so it worked out great. I couldn't really do yard work like I wanted to. I'm going to do that after the show today, and very excited to just have – I haven't done that very much. Last year I did some, but to have the whole day like that was really nice.
Yeah, I got my Saturday started with Riley's baseball tournament down in the Charlotte area, down in Mint Hill, and they were able to win their second game after falling in game one, and Riley had a nice performance, so definitely looking forward to that today as well. He plays at 12, and then if they win, two.
Got out of the jam. I know the game was out of hand, but that bases loaded thing yesterday, and didn't he get a pop out and a strikeout? A pop up, yeah, and a strikeout?
Yeah, he's nine. He's playing 9U, so he's not even, he doesn't turn nine until the end of October. But, and so he hasn't pitched much. He'd been playing coach pitch up to this point here until the last several weeks. And so this is his second time that he had appeared in a game on the mound. So I was proud of him.
Hey guys, you know, when Coach Godwin always has another great stud that we added, watch out for Bubba Rosenbaum's kid, Riley Rosenbaum. He's going to add another great stud here in less than a decade away. That will be awesome. I look forward to that. And obviously my son Alexander wants to play for, he loves Coach Godwin. So can you imagine if both of our boys are on the same team, wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, absolutely. Kind of shifting back to the Sun Belt.
Can we put up the comment from Bubba Grant real quick? And then we'll get into that. I was going to do that while we have a little bit of downtime. He says the sports objective is a great way to start a Sunday morning. Thanks, Bubba, for that nice comment. And now, Bubba Rosenbaum, get back to what you're saying. Sorry about that. I just want to give him a shout out. Appreciate that very much, Bubba.
Yeah. Sticking with the Sun Belt, and I'm bringing it back closer to home, the Sean Clark era began yesterday at App State in terms of, obviously, on the field action. He had coached the bowl game last year when the Mountaineers defeated UAB down in New Orleans. But as far as starting a season, it was Coach Clark's first game. They were originally supposed to start things a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago. But yesterday, they welcomed in in-state foes Charlotte. And it was really a very ball game. Yeah. App State, even though – they didn't pull away and put it away until the very end. And they really controlled the game in a lot of ways. But Charlotte was able to force some turnovers, or App State didn't particularly take good care of the football, which is very unlike them. Last year, they only had something like, I saw the graphic on the screen during the telecast, 9 turnovers all season long.
Wow. And
yesterday they had 3. And some of that was because of Charlotte. I don't want to take credit from the 49ers, but those 3 turnovers, and then also Charlotte had a kickoff return for a touchdown, which allowed them to take that game into the fourth quarter and make it very much in doubt.
No question about it. I think Charlotte looked a lot better than I expected. I thought App State was going to really I know the game they pulled away, but I thought that Appalachian State – I know it's the first game, but I thought Appalachian State was going to – to be up big early, but I'm glad I was wrong. It turned out to be a better football game as far as the score. And like you said, Bubba, if you look at the stats overall, Appalachian State did a nice job controlling the game. And with Charlotte, do you think they're improved, or you just think it was the first game like jitters for the teams?
Well, they won seven games last year and went to a bowl game in Will Healy's first year.
I actually thought
Charlotte had a chance to pull off the upset. I really did. I thought first year head coach at App, not a big Tony Peterson fan, though I shouldn't judge Tony Peterson. He I don't know how he could be expected to do anything under Scotty.
He wasn't calling the plays.
Right. So I thought Charlotte might pull off the upset. And times it looked like they were going to. App ended up pulling away late. I think Charlotte's pretty good. I hadn't seen a lot of CUSA early that's really blown me away. Marshall looked good against Eastern Kentucky, but it was Eastern Kentucky. So I think Charlotte could compete in CUSA for sure. Mountaineers did what they were supposed to do, pulled away at the end, got the win over Charlotte, and another win for the Sun Belt. And I do think App is going to have some competition this year to win the league. There's Bubba back on cam. I was glad to see App win it, take care of business. Something we hadn't talked about, Bubba. They said, all right, Governor, you said we can't have 350 to 500 family members in the stands, but the rule is 50 people do not count. You don't count your media. You don't count your fans. Excuse me. You don't count the media. You don't count your players. You don't count the officials. So they had the parents of seniors and juniors in the stands, 50 of them. So it'll be interesting to see if we do the same. I don't think Carolina did that, but something tells me we might.
Yeah, it was actually Charlotte's beat writer that I saw that from initially on Twitter. I don't know if he was the first to break the news, but yeah, I was glad to see that. It's still a shame that all the parents couldn't attend. It's just totally ridiculous, and that horse has been beaten to death. But Dave, earlier I talked about just how Appalachian, and they had their way in a lot of ways, even though not on the scoreboard. And what I was alluding to was just the way they ran the football. You think of their rushing attack. And Marcus Williams Jr., he did have a fumble earlier that where App State was going in, and it cost them. But he bounced back. Tony Peterson fed him later on when they got down there in the red zone. And he finished with 117 yards, and Cameron Peoples, who was just running extremely hard and showing a lot of attributes as a back, he had 102 as well. So two 100-yard rushers. And then Zach Thomas, nothing spectacular, but he was solid as always. He did have one pick, but he was like 14 out of 21 for 204 yards.
Yeah, I thought Zach made some bad throws. He came into his own as the game went, and thanks to the running game and the great performance by the O-line.
And, but when you have obviously, guys, when you have a good running game, it does several things. One, it takes pressure off the quarterback. But obviously another thing that would help us as far as East Carolina, if we can ever get the running game really, really going, it shortens the game. It's less possessions. It's time of possession that we would have that the other team would not have the ball, and the defensive side of the ball wouldn't get so tired. And then another great thing that Coach Houston's doing across the board, but especially guys at defensive line, is building up certainly depth, especially at defensive line. When you had the starting four guys playing most of the snaps, you know, that was really rough. So that's something that we've got to do, is improve the running game to help us out. And when we improve the running game, we'll definitely win more games.
Yeah, I think Coach Houston thinks that we have the potential to do that this year. We got the transfer from Arkansas, got some other good talent. Of course, you have Darius Penix back, who hopefully is up to this game and can stay healthy. So I think for us it starts with Holton and these receivers, but you can certainly open up you can run a pass for pass to run. And I think with our passing game and our ability to go deep, If we utilize that correctly, that can really open up some run lanes for us. And I think hopefully the O-line will be improved. And I think we have a couple good backs. If the O-line's improved and can run block and we can use the pass to open up the run, I think we could have a good run game this year.
And you look at the tight end position there, Montgomery had no – that was something that used to drive me crazy, as I've said a few times on here, that we had really not that we didn't have talent at tight end. They just didn't use that position like they should. And so that's another thing that they're working really – we got two or three good guys there in the tight end room, if you will. And you have Fontel Mines is a great coach, recruiting coordinator. We got to give him a shout out because he's done an excellent job along with other coaches in recruiting. We were talking about Blake Anderson, made me think of Blake Harrell just because of Blake, the name Blake. Blake Harrell, if we can have, I've said it before, we'll say it again, if we can have a decent defense, we're gonna go when we may, and that's another issue. Another show, as they say, we may go to a bowl anyway, but that would be awesome for the, hey, go to a basketball, we'll go to the tournament, and the football team will go to a bowl game in the same year. And we'll obviously have baseball that's going to do very well. So a great year for the Pirates coming up, looks like.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of the Pirates, one thing you need to do till the Pirates play on the 26th is watch future opponents of the Pirates. And One of our future opponents played last night with the Tulane Green Wave, took on South Alabama down in Mobile and got off to a very slow start. And it's something that the Pirates need to keep in mind as we haven't played a game yet. And UCF will have played a good Georgia Tech team next week before they play us. And we won't have played. Well, South Alabama had played Southern Miss already and had beaten Southern Miss, and Tulane had not played yet and got off to a slow start. And until that fourth quarter, it looked like South Alabama was going to win that game easily. And Tulane wakes up, comes back, rallies in the fourth quarter, and wins by a field goal. I think it was 27-24, but that's right. Down at South Alabama, as they open up their new stadium in Mobile, nice-looking little 25,000-seat stadium. They've been playing the Labs People Stadium, home of the GMAC Bowl or the Mobile Bowl for years.
Right.
Open up their own stadium, and the Green Wave go down there and spoil the opening and get a nice win for the American. And Tulane early on looked like that'd be an easy win for the Pirates potentially, but then suddenly in the fourth quarter, Tulane showed their ability to run the football, and their D-line, their D-line should be really good. They got a couple of NFL caliber defensive line. Tulane looked like the team that some people think they can be in that fourth quarter, but for three quarters, they looked dreadful. Bubba, did you watch that one?
Yeah. I assume you're still talking. I had to step away for a moment. You're talking about the Tulane game?
Correct.
Yeah.
27-24.
Right. Yeah. 27-24. But as you've already referenced, Kyle, they were down 24-6, and then they sliced it down to 24-13 with about 5 minutes left in the third quarter before those two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, things were not looking good for Willie Fritz and company. But to their credit, and despite USA having a game to their belts where Tulane was playing their opener, they found a way to rally from 18 down on the road. And obviously a tremendous amount of excitement there in Mobile with them opening their new venue.
Yeah, I thought good halftime adjustments. And I thought in the fourth quarter it looked like two completely different football teams than what you saw in the first half. So the Green Wave walk away with the victory. Not a lot else yesterday from the American. South Florida.
The Citadel.
27-6. Yeah, nothing too impressive, but they took care of business. Besides that, I believe that's it for the American. If I look, I'm missing something.
You are right.
Interesting note from the American, Memphis has a lot of positive tests. And so they had to cancel their game with Houston, which was next Friday night. I don't know if it's official yet, guys, but according to everything you saw yesterday, Houston, Baylor offered East Carolina an opportunity to play them next weekend, this past week, because Baylor had their game canceled for next weekend. And the Pirates, we turned them down. But Houston did not. Houston came open yesterday, or Friday. They found out they weren't going to play Memphis the following Friday, and it looks like Baylor and Memphis, excuse me, Baylor and Houston have worked out a deal, and Cougs and Baylor will do battle next weekend.
Well, hopefully, I'll just say this. Hopefully, I was telling you, Kyle, off the air, I think it was last week or week before the weeks are running together. I'm really concerned. Obviously, very happy to see those games yesterday because that gives me hope. But I'm very concerned if we stay on nine games, that nine means you're playing six or seven, potentially.
Potentially, so, no, I get what you're saying. The situation with Baylor, I'm assuming the reason why we turned it down is we're still getting players back, and that's the game. If you want a chance to win it, you need to be at 100%.
No, I understand.
I don't know how much they offered us. There was a rumor, and you know, rumors are rumors for a reason. But there was a rumor they offered us $1 million to come play there. I don't know if that's true or not. If that's true, I'm kind of surprised we turned it down with our budget struggles, honestly. But I don't know if that's true. That's just a rumor. Obviously, it's a lot easier trip for Houston to go to Waco than it is for us. So the Cougs will do battle with Baylor next weekend, and should be an interesting game, guys. And I don't know what you guys thought about while I was gone, but I believe the only ACC team we talked about on the air was Syracuse, North Carolina.
Dave, Kyle, we saved the college football talk. We just touched on – Dave brought up the Panthers game today and the Redskins game and pretty much just some NFL talk. But before we move on to the ACC, you guys were talking about Jeff Scott's debut down in Tampa. And I don't know, but I know USF had some guys out for that game. I don't know if it was 10, 20, what it was. Seriously doubt it with anything like Georgia Southern, which we'll get to.
I'll go ahead and get to that, Will, because we were talking about the Sun Belt. It only makes sense to talk about Georgia Southern and Campbell. Georgia Southern had over 30 players out. And I think if it had been anybody but the Campbell Camels, they would have canceled that game. But they thought, well, we can just get by against Campbell. And they did. They did. But, man, it almost caught them. It almost cost them. And, Bubba, that penalty, I don't know if both of you guys watched the end of that game. That penalty, wait a minute, let me make sure I'm getting my games mixed up. Okay, yeah, I am. But they, the three onside kicks, it was a mess there at the end. I felt bad for Campbell. I personally thought, because of all the players out for Georgia Southern, and I know Georgia Southern had the momentum, but Campbell's quarterback was moving the ball constantly and moved it really well in that last possession. I thought they should have kicked the extra point and went to overtime. I thought they had a chance in overtime. But they went for two. Like I said, Georgia Southern down 30 players. Longer the game goes, you might would have benefited Campbell. That's why I thought they should have went to overtime.
27-26.
33 guys out, and seven of those were starters, four on the offensive side and three on defense. I think offensively it was primarily skill guys. I think a couple receivers, a tight end, and a running back. And then on defense they had a starting corner, a starting safety, and then their starting nose tackle out.
Yeah, but then you take guys who aren't starters who rotate in. That's taken away from being able to get guys off the field and give them a breather. And if you're missing 30 guys, you know you ain't been able to practice, right? So it played into Campbell's. If it would have been anybody else, and I'm not taking anything away against Campbell, but if it had been a more high-profile FCS team, or I think any FBS team, I think Georgia Southern would have lost.
You know, Mike Minner has done a nice job. The former Panther guys, I was really impressed. I know that they didn't have 33 players. I get that. But still, he's been building that program his eighth season there at Campbell. And I'm impressed with what he's done. I'm hoping that we can at some point, I guess we've got them on the schedule, don't we, Campbell?
Yeah,
coming up.
It makes
perfect sense if you're playing an FCS game, and certainly with budget issues we'll have probably for the next handful of years, a team like Campbell makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I'm down the road, Boyd's Creek, some time from Greenville. So you know, I was cheering for the Camels hard, man. That's you know,
that was a cool game. That was, I told you, Kyle, that was probably my favorite game. Certainly with the local tie being Campbell, Boys Creek, not too far away from Greenville.
Another game, man. Their quarterback looked really good. That kid made some great throws. He was that big kind of hoss, but could run a little.
Run really well, yeah.
A little David Girardish.
Yeah, he's 6 feet 205. As far as Williams, the Campbell quarterback.
He looked a lot. He ain't got what Girard had, but he
looked taller than that. Wow.
No, he didn't look very – when you looked at him, Bubba, he didn't look like he would be that fast. But he could pull it down and run. And I was impressed with him. Kind of don't know his recruiting situation. I don't know if that was his best performance of his career. I don't know if he normally plays that well. But he did a great job. And under a high-stress situation, led him right down the field to what would have been to tie it up, but they went for two at the end. So, good for the Camels. Unfortunately, they came up just short. If you're a Georgia Southern fan, you are glad that they survived without 30 players. Ooh. Now, I think they got a week off before they have to play Florida Atlantic, and they can get those kids back, hopefully.
And Kyle, to your point, right quick about Williams. Williams, he was a proven commodity, and last year he was the offensive newcomer of the year in the Big South. And then yesterday he finished 17 out of 27 for 237 yards, two touchdowns, did not throw an interception. And then you were talking about his mobility. He also ran for 73 yards and a score.
Yes, he looked good, man. I don't know how he wasn't at an FBS school. It just goes to show you that it's hard to evaluate talent sometimes, and there's so many kids out there. Kids get missed, or they get pegged in. Well, he's an FCS quality player for whatever reason. But that kid, from what I saw, is an FBS quarterback.
You know, with what's so interesting is the very fact with us, with games, just watching the games, it gives you, I guess, hope with us that we'll be ready on time. And one good thing is,
I'll tell you one thing, Dave, that I've seen, and I don't know if you guys agree. Nobody in the American that I've seen has blown me away. I wasn't blown away by Navy. I wasn't blown away by Tulane. I wasn't blown away by South Florida. So the American teams I've seen so far, with the exception of Memphis, I feel, and I don't think we play Memphis this year. I feel, without seeing us play, I feel like we have our chances.
Yeah, and again, I just have this weird feeling that COVID-19 has been so strange. What if we have a great year? You know, obviously the UCF, it's tough that we start the first game against USCF, but maybe that will be a good thing that nobody knows what we're going to look like, and we can, being a home game, maybe we can pull off an upset. Who knows? But certainly I'm going to be hopeful until I can't be when it comes to our team, especially when you have Coach Houston, and I think having more depth at the defensive line is something that I feel like that's the one position on the defensive side of the ball that it wasn't that we didn't have talent, the depth issue. And then the linebacker position, Bubba, I know that's something that's coming along nicely. And I think, ironically, the secondary is where we're the deepest, right? My memory serves me right.
Yeah, we certainly have our question marks there. That goes without saying in the secondary. But you do have Jaquan McMillan, who had a tremendous freshman year. And need a whole lot more of him. And unfortunately, Nigel Knott hasn't been able to get on the field a whole lot after transferring in from Alabama. Hopefully that situation will change on whatever's going on with him, injury-wise or whatnot. But then you also had some other transfers. So definitely think we're talented, but we're certainly green.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bubba. I think that's pretty much the case of the defense by and large. A lot of talent, you know, a lot of bodies, a lot of potential, but very young. I would expect we're going to see some growing pains early, and that defense is going to get better as the year goes on. But unfortunately, thinking early, we open up with UCF. But before we get there, guys, UCF is going to play Georgia Tech next weekend. And the Yellow Jackets got a huge win yesterday over Florida State down in Tallahassee. in a game that I watched the first half. A lot of the weather delays. That game started at like 3 o'clock and then got over with till close to nine, and there was two lightning delays. Georgia Tech goes down to Tallahassee and comes from down 10-0 and wins it late. And I think Florida State fans were looking for Coach Norvell to open things up with a Vic, and year two for Coach Collins in Atlanta. And Georgia Tech handles business and starts off 1-0 in the ACC.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I was able to watch some of that ball game, Kyle, and Florida State jumped out to that 10-0 lead, and it looked like I want to say they were close to a 2-touchdown favorite, but Georgia Tech found a way to hang in. And then after the lightning delay, I think when the lightning delay actually happened, it was 7-0.
Two lightning delays, weren't there?
I'm not sure. I knew there was at least that one that was pretty lengthy early on. I tuned it over there at 3:30 when the game was supposed to kick, and you told me what was going on.
It was a lightning delay, and the rain was coming down hard. That was early on, I think. Still, obviously, they could play in the rain, but because of the lightning. But it was coming. That rain was coming down something hard there, and then just shows guys with Mike Norvell is a great coach. Of course, at Memphis, did a nice job there with the Tigers and moving there. Kyle, I know you said it pre-show when we were meeting. They definitely have. When you hear the cupboard is bare, that's usually a really bad excuse, or people just make that excuse a lot. I think at Florida State, they have been living off their name, meaning they don't have the talent that lives up to their name normally. They've been living off their name for about 4 or 5 years now, don't you think?
Well, it appeared yesterday on the offensive side of the ball that they may have been void of some talent, or either Georgia Tech just has a really good defense, which is possible. John Collins has a defensive background. Right. So that's possible that Georgia Tech's defense is just a lot better. It could be a combination of both, but their offense struggled mightily in the second half. I don't know. I know Coach Norvell can coach offense, so it looked to me like they have some talent issues, and it appeared that way last year under Taggart.
Their offensive line is so undersized. It definitely doesn't look like a Florida State size team for offensive line. So. Another big story, guys, is obviously Virginia Tech has got a lot of they had enough of the COVID issue that they had to postpone their game against Virginia Tech next week. So Duke and Virginia are going to play next week, Bubba. So that's another story. In fact, the story broke about, I know you sent us a text, I believe it was you, Bubba, 9 o'clock yesterday morning. It was weird that the team was at Duke was actually going to. They found out at 11 a.m. as they're going into the stadium there at in South Bend against Notre Dame, they found out that, you had that week off, that bye week? Well, you don't have that bye week anymore. You're playing Virginia, so I was going to bring that up because that's an interesting storyline, probably the one of many we're going to have this year in our league. I know Memphis-Houston, we're talking about that, but certainly – Duke and Virginia next week, so that's going to be really interesting to see that. We didn't see that one coming, but I guess that's going to be. It's kind of like you always hear about sports as a male soap opera. Well, we've got a lot of storylines off the field. It's not about players getting suspended and arrested. It's more of the COVID issue this year.
Yeah, it was. Yesterday during that Duke Notre Dame game, I saw that news as far as Duke and UVA rescheduling their game and playing. But yesterday morning early, like you're saying, that news broke as far as Virginia Tech and UVA having to postpone to sometime in November, more like when they typically play.
I think it's November the 14th, Bubba. My memory's
not right. I didn't see exactly, but I just knew that they had referenced that Mike Tirico when he was talking about Duke and UVA playing next week, I guess you said. So Virginia Tech's play-by-play voice, John Lazor, who's been there several years now, he was going to be joining this week's The Inside Slant on Saturday morning, but we'll bump things back with him, and he'll join us that following week when Virginia Tech hopefully plays its first game against NC State.
Right. And, you know, that game, I'm glad you mentioned that, Bubba. I forgot that. I was going to mention that, too. I'm glad you said that. Virginia Tech and NC State were supposed to play yesterday, and they actually had to bump the game. As you remember, NC State, when they had their breakout, their cluster, they had to move it from the 12th to the 26th. So another shuffling of the schedule. And so they'll we'll keep our fingers crossed for the Hokies and the Wolfpack on the 26th for sure. And that should be a great matchup. Dave Doran with his first game for the 2020 campaign. And obviously Justin Fuente and Roenick there at Virginia Tech. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, that Bubba, I still think that when you look at that game last night, we mentioned briefly earlier with Clemson, start of the show, I just I'm having a hard time. Maybe you can make an argument, another team, anything is possible, especially with this COVID thing going on. But Clemson looks like, I mean, by far the number one team in America. I don't know that there's anybody in the ACC, or there's teams I know outside of the ACC, but I just really believe if Ohio State is not going to play, you know, and Oklahoma, I know there's some teams in there you can make an argument for, but like LSU is going to be down this year. Obviously, they're not going to have the talent they had last year. I mean, you can, there's other teams. I'm sure Alabama will be in the mix, but what do you think about Clemson? Do you think there's anybody in the ACC and or the country that can beat them?
On a given week, I mean, last year North Carolina nearly did it. I think Notre Dame, Louisville, and we've talked about some of those prime suspects to potentially take Clemson down. But yeah, the Tigers, a very workmanlike effort, and they were up 37-3 in that game, probably like mid to late third quarter, and then just really had it on cruise control from that point on. Trevor Lawrence was solid, as you would expect, completing, I think, over 75% of his passes for about 350 yards. Travis Etienne had a 100-yard day, and they were able to get their backups on plenty of quality work there in the second half against the Demon Deacons in a game that finished 37-13, but was certainly not that close.
No, not only that, but I don't think – I know it's master of the obvious right now, Bubba, but I find it hard to believe there'll be anybody that can beat Trevor Lawrence unless he gets hurt and out for the year. Not that I obviously want that, but I really think that it's going to be anticlimactic when it comes to the Heisman. I really believe that that he can win the Heisman, and it's his to, in other words, it's his to lose right now, without a doubt.
Yeah, he's certainly one of those names that you'll hear all season long, and I think he'll probably get pushed by a handful of individuals, but I can definitely see why you think he's the front runner.
Yeah, and then there's some that mentioned last week too with off the field with his leadership, and there's some that are even giving him a lot of credit, Bubba. How about this? With his campaign, We Want to Play, that he may be the reason why the three power leagues stayed in there. I don't know that – I mean, you know, you can make an argument for that, but three out of the five power five leagues are still in existence. And then maybe another thing that we alluded to, but another thing that was met, they met last night, Bubba, I think the Big 10 teams are really getting a lot of heat from the parents, the players, the fact that they're seeing, oh my God, that yeah, there's some things going on, but these guys are playing college football and we're not. I don't know. I hadn't heard much about the Pac-12, but the Big 10, I think, we may see them towards the end of the football season. What do you think? Start playing.
It's looking more and more that way. Last night on the broadcast of the Wake Forest Clemson game, Sean McDonough was actually saying that they had talked to Dabo Swinney, or other folks had, and he was reporting the news that Dabo said when asked, would he push back the college football playoff? So those leagues could be involved, whether it was the Big Ten and or the Pac-12, and he said absolutely not. They had the same opportunity everybody else did.
I agree.
They chose to push it back, and I agree with Dabo on that. If they can figure out a way to safely and just all work out all the logistics in terms of getting tests to where they need to be, getting the teams to practice they need to get before they kick things off. The SEC is starting here on the 26th. If they can find a way to start maybe a week or two later or something, and so
have like they been practicing.
Yeah, they. I think
Big Ten is right.
As far as I know, they.
I hadn't heard about the Pac-12, well, but I'm sure
not 100% on that. The NCAA, of course,
yeah, I remember the rule.
That rule where you could have 12 hours of practice, even though you weren't playing. So hopefully some of those teams have been doing that. And then if they choose to play, then maybe the Big Ten can get things going in mid-October where maybe they could have a shot at still getting a team like an Ohio State or a Penn State or whomever into the playoffs.
Yeah, you play your conference schedule.
Just play the eight games.
Yeah, you can get it done. As far as pushing the playoff back, whether Dabo wants to do it or not, I wonder if it's going to have to be done. Because, you know, I mentioned to you, Bubba, how all these conference championship games are going to have to be pushed back to the 19th.
Yeah, we talked about that, Kyle. Yeah.
Well, I think it may have to be pushed back even further. I think with the amount of games that are going to have to be made up, I think the ACC has done a smart decision. Leaving dates open in their schedule for teams to play and go ahead and, like with Duke and Virginia, I think that's a smart move. Was Duke and Virginia scheduled to play later this year?
Yeah, I believe that they were, I was telling Bubba, I think November. I'll have to double check on that, but they pushed it up to next week.
Does that open up a date for Virginia and Virginia Tech now?
I think that they're going to push that they're going to move that game to that slot in the middle of November, somewhere around there, I think.
Okay.
Closer to when they, like Bubba said earlier, they're being a rival week. It would be closer to the Thanksgiving weekend game that they normally have anyway. Makes more sense.
But my point is, if you have to go later than the 19th, let's say, I guess the following Friday, would that be the 26th? I don't think you're going to do it around the 26th because Christmas, but let's say you have to move conference championship games back to around New Year's.
That'd then be cool anyway, wouldn't it?
Then the playoff will be pushed back even further. So that may happen whether Dabo wants it or not. But also, Dabo doesn't make those decisions. so he can say what he wants to. He doesn't make those calls. I know it might seem like he runs college football, but he don't.
So he's not the college football commissioner now?
No. So if the college football playoff thinks that it's going to be lucrative to include the Big Ten. Don't be surprised if it gets pushed back.
Especially if they go ahead, Kyle, if they go ahead and I think it comes down to how quickly the Big Ten makes a decision. If they keep stalling and stalling, then obviously.
They're supposed to meet today. So I bet you we know today.
Okay. Well, hopefully so. And those kids deserve to play in Ohio State.
And what about the Pac-12? It's the Pac-12. It's the Big Ten. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about the Pac-12. What about the Mountain West? What about the MAC? The MAC seemed to have just done what the Big Ten did. You know, very geographically similar area, and they seem to have just followed. Well, now the MAC, you know, all right. Well, now we're going to come play conference games, which does not have any implication on the playoff, but it does have implication on bowl games. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if anybody else follows suit. And, if you're the MAC in the Mountain West and the Pac-12, if you see the Big Ten is going to play in the fall, then you got less and less company in the spring. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if the Pac-10 starts a trend, if they come back or Big Ten, it'll be interesting to see if the Big Ten comes back, if some of these other conferences decide to join with them and, play football after all.
And guys, if you look at a team like Boise State, those guys, I mean, you know, with them, I mean, you can't miss a whole year of football. I mean, so what happens if the hypothetical of the Mountain West, they don't play, you know?
I guess you can just have conference competition in the spring and try to decide a conference championship. You won't have postseason play unless it's just like, I guess essentially it could be them in the Pac-12 and then the Mountain West champion plays the Pac-12 champion in some sort of bowl game. I don't know.
Have you guys heard anything? I haven't heard anything as far as bowl games officially? I've been waiting for that, but I've been looking around. I haven't seen anything. Have you guys seen anything?
I heard that the Hunger Bowl, the Fight Hunger, the Craft, whatever the hell that is out in San Francisco. I heard that bowl's already been postponed, and
that's the one I was telling you. Okay, that was the one I was telling you about.
I heard that there was another one, but nobody can ever tell me which it was. Everybody says there was a couple, and they can identify that one. So I don't know what the other one was. Guys, have we broke down all the games that need to be broke down? Bubba, is there any other games that are coming to mind for you?
I wanted to talk about that Texas Tech-Houston Baptist game. I was watching a lot of it on ESPN Plus or ESPN3, whichever it was. But last week, Houston Baptist had taken on North Texas and lost. They weren't that competitive, something like 57-31. And they were taking on their second of three consecutive FBS teams. That's all they're playing this fall. And last night in Lubbock, they gave the Red Raiders everything they wanted and then some. Took them down to the wire and just a failed two-point conversion. This one to tie, not to take the lead like Campbell, Georgia Southern. But 35-33, Texas Tech hung on.
Yeah, that's Houston Baptist has a pretty good FCS program. Or they have in the past. I don't think they have very recently, but they have in the past been good. I believe that's where Willie Fritz used to coach. Correct me if I'm wrong. Before Georgia Southern, but
he was actually at Sam Houston State.
Okay, well,
I think it's Sam Houston State that you're probably thinking of as far as being a perennial SES playoff team.
All right, yeah, Houston Baptist sucks. nice game for them against the Red Raiders. And almost pulling off the shocking upset, and good thing the Pirates don't play them, huh, Bubba?
Yeah, their offensive coordinator, he's a Texas Tech alum. He had been at Texas Tech. I want to say that he maybe graduated from there as recently as 2014, but a very very young guy, certainly a name, and I'll get that name for you in a moment. But a guy to keep an eye on to see if he's getting an OC job at a FBS program here in the near future. They've certainly lit it up the first two games, and they will have that one more game. I'm trying to remember. It's another FBS program within the state of Texas. I don't recall which, but yeah, Bailey Zappi, as you see there scrolling across the bottom of your screen, he's thrown for close to 1,100 yards the last 2 weeks. Last night, wow. He finished with 567 yards against Texas Tech.
Another good OC comes out of Texas Tech with an air raid mindset. Who would have thought?
And like you were saying, Kyle, as far as that was something that we had heard regarding the Pirates, potentially maybe there was a connection between Mike Houston and a member of that HBU staff, but that was one that could potentially be added next weekend on the 19th. When we're currently open, and with our green defense, maybe it was a blessing that we didn't go against that HBU passing attack.
It could have been fun. Could have been like a very high scoring shootout. But it is what it is. Another one. You guys talk about Texas State and UTSA.
No, we were going to talk about that. That was a game that. With Texas State came back there, but with the Roadrunners having a brand new head coach, I thought that that was really interesting to see. They get a win and being, I guess that's one area where Conference USA beat the Sun Belt Conference there. But certainly that was I enjoyed that game.
Texas State without their starting quarterback for that game, he had tested positive for COVID. So the backup quarterback leads them in that game and gets his footing in the second half and brings them back. And they have a punt return for a touchdown, a few seconds left. All they got to do is kick the extra point to walk off the field with the big, exciting W, and they missed the freaking extra point. Go to overtime, miss a chip shot field goal in overtime, and UTSA wins. I feel bad for that kicker. If that had been in an SEC school, he'd probably be getting death threats. So feel bad for the kid, but you got to do your job. You're there for a reason, and missed the extra point for the W, and then missed the chip shot field goal in overtime, and UTSA escaped San Marcos with a win. And Texas State is now 0-2 and has played really well in both games, and back against the eight ball yesterday without their starting quarterback. Feel bad for those guys.
No question, and that's certainly, again, great day for, I guess, the biggest thing, guys, a great day for the Sun Belt. As we mentioned all throughout the show, it's amazing how far that conference has come, and they've done a nice job. I think, Kyle, you made the great point a little bit ago that they made a great decision with the realignment. They've added some teams in there that have really know how to play football, and not only that, they've done a nice job of hiring football coaches too, Kyle.
No, they have. They've done a great job of hiring football coaches, and they've kind of made the conference more regional. Also, it's still spread out, but the East makes sense and the West makes sense in terms of their two divisions. And I guess one game, I don't know. Did you guys discuss Duke and Notre Dame?
We have not.
A little bit, not much, guys. I'll tell you what, the Bryce kid, the grad transfer from Clemson. Very athletic for Duke. That was one thing they didn't really have last year. The offense tanked last year. I tell you, another thing I was really impressed with Duke was their defense was very aggressive, a lot more. The defensive coordinator for Duke said that pregame that they were going to make sure that they limited the run, and they did a nice job, guys, there where they pretty much made Ian Book. Another thing that was driving me crazy, if you're watching the game, is there was so many, if you're a Notre Dame fan, there was so many drop passes. There were so many, I think Ian Book looked like he overthrew some. I don't, Bubba, you're the quarterback, not me. But there was a lot of drop passes. I mean, it was just, I was like, I'm like watching that game. I'm like, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're going, how many times can you bobble a ball, you drop a ball, you have your quarterback overthrowing a little bit? I mean, what did you guys think?
David Cutcliffe back calling plays for Duke, by the way, he being his own OC.
Yeah.
I thought
he did a nice job calling the game, obviously.
I thought Notre Dame, you know, I'm not sure how good they are. I'm not sure how good Duke is. I kind of, you know, thought Notre Dame may be the second best team in the ACC this year. They still may be. Don't know yet. But it was weird to see that ACC logo field at Notre Dame, the Irish take care of Duke. And again, I'm not sure after watching that game, you know, if Notre Dame is not as good as people thought they were going to be, or if Duke's a little better, or if it's a combination of the two. Nonetheless, Notre Dame gets the W, and nothing in particular stood out to me about the game. What about you, Bubba?
Yeah, that was a game where Notre Dame was about a 3-touchdown favorite or so, depending on where you looked. And Duke certainly had its shots, but then Notre Dame kind of seized control of that one as the second half went on. And I was definitely pulling for Duke to win that game just from the standpoint of I don't like Notre Dame at all.
Rudy. Yeah.
Nothing more to do with Notre Dame for sure than wanting Duke to win. But yeah,
Bubba has an agenda against the Catholic Church.
Kyle starting rumors.
How about the fact that do you guys what is your over under? What is the chances that Notre Dame stays in the conference in 21? 0? 10%? What do you think?
You don't want to say never. If they go win this thing and make the playoffs, that's interesting. Let's say they
I can argue it both ways. So,
well, let's say they go, let's say they have two or three losses, but somehow they're the second best team in the ACC. And then go beat Clemson in the championship and get in the playoffs. They may find that the path to the playoffs is a lot easier that way.
It is a lot easier.
But my guess is no, they will not. I would say there's about a 1% chance they stay in the league.
Yeah, I don't see them staying in. They used the term yesterday, partnership. I love that, how partnership with the league. I think that the speaking of living off their name, I think we're talking about Florida State. I think Notre Dame, Brian Kelly is a great coach. No disrespect to him. A great story program. They've won 11 national championships. But notice they haven't won a national championship since I was in high school. I mean, no disrespect for them at all. I mean, with Lou Holtz, I don't have anything. I don't hate Notre Dame, but I mean, they haven't won a title since, what was it, 88, 89, 88, somewhere around there. I mean, it's been a long time. And that's one thing that they always, you know, they have the name and the story program, but they haven't done anything. There's a generation of guys playing right now. They never saw Notre Dame win anything as far as the national championships is concerned. So that's one thing that frustrates for me is, why wouldn't you join the league when you have more of a chance to win a national championship and have, like you said, Kyle, an easier path to win the national championship? Look at Dabo Swinney. If Clemson's in the SEC, do you really think that they're going to win a couple titles? No disrespect to Clemson, but the SEC is a much harder league than ACC.
Dave, you actually answered your own question there without meaning to, as far as why Notre Dame wouldn't join the league. Because they're Notre Dame, because they have that deal with NBC, because people do cater to them. They have their own, just like they did with the BCS, now they have their own basically clause with the college football playoff. They get that special treatment because they're Notre Dame, and that's where my dislike of Notre Dame comes in.
And you kind of wonder the fact what Dave was saying about how they've been good to mediocre over the last 20 years, 25 years. Not great. If they go join the ACC 10 years from now, are they still Notre Dame, or they're just another school in the ACC? As long as they're independent, they're still Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't think they're going to join the ACC, but I understand that with all the clauses and all that. But another thing too, guys, is that when is it 23 that we have the potential realignment with a lot of the TV contracts coming up? I know that they have this NBC deal, but as far as, isn't that coming up in a few years?
Not sure, Dave, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know what year that is.
It's coming up soon in the next few years.
If you're talking about
the playoff is coming up.
I believe it's 26.
Okay.
Yeah, what Kyle's saying sounds right. I think it's farther down the road than 23.
Well, certainly with the playoff, you know how I felt about that. Hopefully one of these days we'll get what we want. So even I'll take 8 for sure. It's a step in the right direction over the ridiculous 4. And another thing is it's better than the BCS, but it's a made for TV event. That's why I don't lose sleep over it. It's like, well, I'm resigned to the fact that they're never going to allow an East Carolina, UCF, the teams, it has to be Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma. No disrespect to our friends out in Norman. I love Lincoln Riley, but it has to be a brand name team for the 4. If not, then they're not going to put it's not going to be a March Madness. And the sad thing is it could be even bigger than the March Madness tournament as far as basketball, but they're never going to put an underrated team or a non.
You know, over the years, was it the first year of the playoff, Bubba, where TCU should have got in and got left out, and they're a Power 5 school, but they're the newest power. They're the least sexy name brand, and guess what? They were the odd man out.
I think it was 2014, the first year of the playoff, something like that.
Yeah, 2014 was the first year of the college football playoff because that initial poll came out, and
we were in it.
The Pirates were in it, and
went to Temple and stunk it up.
You know, does anybody know? What happened to that guy that invented the playoffs? The Dr. Pepper guy that invented the playoffs. Does anybody know where he is now?
He's a witness protection program, I guess.
Yeah, I know what I'm talking about.
I know the commercials.
I know what you're talking about with it.
I don't know. He's gone. You know, they went to the Fanville commercials, and the Dr. Pepper guy is gone. And initially, I was glad to see him gone because I was sick of those commercials. But now I wonder, you know, where is he? You know, I thought maybe he'd pop up in Fanville one day, but I haven't seen him. Getting worried.
Hey, but a few minutes ago when we were talking about that Texas Tech-Houston Baptist game, I talked about HBU
right over y'all's head.
No, not at all. I just didn't know what to say about. I remember the commercials, but other than that, that's all I could say about it. But
exactly
right, you guys. Screw you both.
But Zach Kittley is that HBU offensive coordinator's name, and he has an interesting story. He's a native of Lubbock because his dad is the head track and field coach at Texas Tech. He originally went to Abilene Christian to play basketball, but then came back to Texas Tech and got his bachelor's degree from Texas Tech and also a master's degree from Texas Tech. And during that time, he served 3 years as a GA on Cliff Kingsbury's staff, where he was learning that offense, like you were saying earlier, Kyle. And this is his third year now as the OC at HBU. And this is the third year working with his quarterback, Bailey Zappe, who has thrown for close to 1,100 yards in these last two ball games against North Texas and Texas Tech. So keep an eye on Zach Kittley. He may be one quickly rising through the coaching ranks in years to come.
So I went to Abilene Christian to play basketball, transfers to Texas Tech, where his dad's a track coach and doesn't even play basketball or football, becomes a – How did he even get that role as GA? I wonder. What a weird path, and
whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes.
It does say prior to spending those 3 years as a GA, he was an offensive intern in 2014 and a student assistant coach in 2013. So very much like Lincoln Riley, when Lincoln Riley hung up the cleats and helmet and decided to pursue coaching earlier than anticipated.
Yeah.
But as far as making that seemingly abrupt transition from being a basketball player to in 2013 being a offensive assistant on the Texas Tech football staff, I would like to hear that backstory. Maybe we can get.
I would bet you his dad, if he grew up in Lubbock, I bet you he grew up a Texas Tech fan. He loved that offense. He wanted to play football at Texas Tech. He wanted to play football, period. Basketball is where he excelled. He went to Abilene Christian because they offered him a scholarship. He played the shooty hoops. He said, screw this. I'm going to go to Texas Tech and learn this offense from Kingsbury, because he grew up a Mike Leach fan, and that's what happened. I bet you that's the story. Right.
And why find out the truth? And the way you put it right there, Kyle, that sounds like the truth to me.
Exactly.
Hey, guys, did you want to take a look really quick before we go with the upcoming games, a sneak peek of next week's games?
Yeah, let's take a look at week three.
Okay. I'm looking at it right now. Here's an interesting matchup for Friday night, guys, at 7 o'clock. One of Kyle's favorite teams, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, are taking on Campbell. They're in, I guess that's Conway, so that'll be a great matchup on Friday night. Boston College and Duke are playing. You've got another ACC matchup, Syracuse, Pitt. Here's one that looks, guys, we got a few. I think there's at least four.
Oh, Duke was playing UVA now on the 19th.
We'll have to double check on that. Yeah. They've moved everything around. We'll see. Or maybe the 26th. We'll look at that coming up. We have Tulsa, Oklahoma State coming up for the Golden Hurricane. They're going to be taking on the Cowboys. That'll be interesting. How about we've talked about Houston Baylor, another noon game. The Bearcats, obviously with Luke Fickell, they actually are 20th in the nation. Austin Peay, they are not looking good at 0-2. Navy and Tulane, guys, that's going to be a great, great game. What do you think?
Be interesting to see how that one plays out. Tulane struggled some last night but found a way to beat South Alabama. Navy looked terrible against BYU. I'm guessing they've been hitting over the last 2 weeks. I would expect a better performance from Navy against Tulane. Is that one in Annapolis or New Orleans?
That's in New Orleans. On ABC. You have that's going to be an interesting matchup, certainly a conference game and one for the American. How about here's one for you, Kyle. Another one of your favorites, Liberty, the Flames, going on against Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers. That's another one, a high noon.
Liberty, one of my favorites.
I'm just joking.
Liberty against Western Kentucky should be interesting. Western did not look very good last night against Louisville, but, you know, how good is Louisville? That'll be an interesting game, actually, yeah.
Here's another one of your favorites. Louisiana, Georgia State, another matchup that should be interesting. High
I
noon.
Know. I heard a lot. Georgia State, that's our next opponent after UCF.
Yep.
So that's Georgia State's first game. Louisiana Lafayette coming off the upset of Iowa State. Sometimes that's a good time to get somebody when they're flying high. And you got to wonder, pay attention to this COVID test. Because I imagine when they arrive back in Lafayette, they're going to be partying hard down there in Cajun country. Lafayette's a party town. And I would imagine they'd be in at the bar. Some of the young ladies wanting to congratulate the boys on beating Iowa State. So check this COVID test before they play the Panthers of Georgia State.
Hey, to be fair to you, Kyle, Bubba's favorite team, Appalachian State's taking on Marshall next week.
That's a good one. Marshall played Eastern Kentucky. Eastern Kentucky is horrible. I do think Marshall's pretty good. I think Appalachian State's pretty good. That'll be an interesting one in Huntington. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, we'll definitely get a much better test of how good Marshall is next week for sure. And I do think that will be a competitive football game. I'll be surprised if it's lopsided either way, particularly toward Marshall. But I'm very interested to see how that goes next week in Huntington.
USF is traveling to South Bend, guys, against number 10 Notre Dame. Should be we'll see how South Florida tests against Notre Dame. But you would think that Notre Dame, with the athletes, they should be able to pull off that win and be 2-0 for sure. We'll see how that plays out. We were talking about UTSA. The Roadrunners are taking on Stephen F. Austin, one of my favorite mascot names, the Lumberjacks.
That will certainly be UTSA and Stephen F. Austin.
Yeah. What about the one game we were talking about with the Pirates? Obviously taking on one of the matchups to talk about, guys, in a 3:30 window is UCF, the 21st in the nation. They're actually getting their season debut against Georgia Tech on ABC at 3:30. That's one that I'll definitely be watching next Saturday.
Yeah, Georgia Tech coming off the win over FSU. Suddenly people are going to be paying more attention to Georgia Tech. Certainly that got the USF. Yeah, which it is. They fired up UCF because now UCF can beat the team that beat Florida State, being the Noles won't play tonight. So that'll be a good game, one that the Pirate fans need to be paying attention to because we'll be playing UCF if they go to Little Willing and the Creek Don't Rise the very next weekend.
And in Chapel Hill, the Tar Heels hosting their one non-ACC game. They're hosting the 49ers of Charlotte coming off the loss to Appalachian State. So you feel like that North Carolina should be able to take care of the 49ers.
Yeah, you would think so. I would expect the Niners to be fired up, but I think that will unfortunately be all Carolina in that one. I think there's some and there it seems like you're missing a couple of big ACC matchups and a couple of Big 12 matchups.
I'm missing all of them. Florida Atlantic, Georgia Southern coming up 3:30 next on ESPN.
Southern need to get some players back if they're going to beat Florida Atlantic.
About here's a big matchup for you, Kyle. I'm saying that sarcastically. Should be no trouble for the Clemson Tigers. They're taking on the Bulldogs at the Citadel. 4 o'clock. That's the ACC network. I don't see that one. I probably won't be watching much of that game next Saturday on the couch.
Yeah, that'll be a good game for the walk-ons to get in for Clemson.
We have Troy, Middle Tennessee. That should be a decent game. What do you think?
Middle looked like hot garbage against Navy. Army. Against Army. I'm sorry. Troy, I believe that's their first game.
That's correct.
So that'll be interesting to see what Troy is this year.
Have SMU taking on at North Texas, the Mean Green on the CBS Sports Network at that would be 6 o'clock Eastern.
That'll be a good game. That'll be a good game. That'll be a high scoring game. North Texas got a good offense. SMU's got a good offense. SMU can't play defense. Wouldn't be surprised if North Texas pulls off that upset. That'll be a very high-scoring game. That'll be a fun one to watch.
And we were talking about Blake Anderson. They're the Red Wolves of Arkansas State are hosting Central Arkansas, the Bears. That'll be on ESPN Plus. It looks like 7 o'clock on Saturday night.
Yeah. three games that I'm taking a look at, in addition to UCF and Georgia Tech for obvious reasons, and with the Pirates playing UCF in the opener, we hope. The games that I'm really keeping a close eye on for different reasons, you have Southern Miss with the interim head coach, them taking on La Tech down at the Rock. That's also going to be the Bulldogs' opener because they were supposed to play Baylor, had to bump that back or cancel, whichever it was, due to COVID issues and having so many positive tests and contact tracing issues. So keep an eye on that one. Mm-hmm. And then you also have Louisville taking on Miami. Miami and De'Aaron King going to Louisville.
Yeah, that's at 7:30.
And then also NC State and Wake Forest. That may have been one of the ones you were thinking about, Kyle, as far as local in-state interest, with NC State having battled its own COVID issues and having to bump that game back with Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest getting underway and having a game under its belt against number one Clemson. We'll be interested to see how that one goes at Carter Finley Stadium next weekend.
Yeah, and two more to wrap it up. We have Texas State, the Bobcats. They're traveling to Louisiana Monroe, the Warhawks. That'll be on ESPNU, 7:30 on Saturday night. And then the last game will be the UTEP Miners against Abilene Christian. That'll be at 9 o'clock on Saturday night. So a good slate of games, and certainly guys looking forward to it. Our game, we have one more week, less than 2 weeks away, and we'll be hosting, obviously, UCF. So it'll be really interesting to see.
A lot of good games next weekend, and I still believe there was a couple Big 12 games that didn't get mentioned somehow. But
That's all I've got on the list of games. But we'll double check. But that's we mentioned every single one they had.
Kyle. According to my app, the only games on the Big 12 schedule for next weekend are Oklahoma State, Tulsa, and then that newly added game between Baylor and Houston.
Okay. All right. Good deal.
All right, guys, do you have anything before we wrap it up? I know Bubba's going to Riley's game. He did a great job yesterday pitching, and I know playing. I'm really proud of him. So good luck to the Rosenbaums today, Bubba, and I appreciate all your hard work on the podcast. Same with you, Kyle. What do you have? You guys have anything before we go?
Pay attention. There'll be game changes every week, all week. There'll be a game that is scheduled right now that will not be played this weekend, and it's going to be like that all season.
How about you, Bubba?
No, I do not. Sorry, I was – Stacy is blowing me up there. So,
all right.
I cannot unmute myself fast enough.
You were doing what?
Blowing up the phone, I guess. All right. Well,
She was blowing my phone up, not blowing up my restroom. I'll take Stacy off the hook there.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, appreciate everybody watching and certainly listening. It's awesome. And college football playoff, I should say playback, not playoff. The second week, we're very happy to do that. We'll do again next week. Guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'm going to go do some yard work, and I'll see you back here in the next couple of days. We'll have fun. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to College Football Playback right here on the Sports Objective. Good day, everybody. Go Pirates.